නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ So we all can hope you all can remember that we were discussing Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, where Buddha explains some more details, some deep details about the six senses or six base sense bases, and there he start the sutta giving a kind of a summary or titles of the sutta. There he mentioned one needs to recognize the six sense bases and internal sense bases, and then six external sense bases, then again six classes of consciousness, and then six contacts, and then 18 kinds of mental exploration. And then we have to move towards the 36 positions of beings. And I have drawn a diagram just to show you. Now we can summarize the whole thing like this. So there are six internal bases: eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. And they are not merely the physical part, but using them there are many functions happening. Eye is here for seeing part, ear is for listening, nose is for recognizing various odors, tongue is for recognizing various tastes, body is to recognize various pressure, temperature, and then mind is to recognize various mental objects. And speciality with the mind is that it is capable of knowing or memorizing, reflecting the other five types of external sense bases as well. Now, six external sense bases are there. So those are the corresponding sense bases or the corresponding objects, stimuli to the internal sense bases. So they are form, sound, smell, taste, touch, and dhamma. Now, as I have already mentioned, form is only recognized by the eye, and then sounds are only recognized by ear, smells are only recognized by nose, tastes are only recognized by tongue, touch is only recognized by body, dhamma is only recognized by mind. And the mind actually reflects form, sound, smell, taste, touch as well, actually going through the other senses. So mind is very much like a kind of an accumulator where all the sense data is manipulated, calculated, or exaggerated, multiplicated, constructed, recognized, and all those kinds of activities are done in the mind. Now, because of eye and form, the eye consciousness arise; ear and sound, the ear consciousness arise. Because of nose and smell, nose consciousness arise. Because of tongue and taste, tongue consciousness arise. Because of body and touch, body consciousness arise. Because of mind and dhamma, mind consciousness arise. And these things are happening quite rapidly, and it appears like all these three are existing. For example, eye form, eye consciousness. So they are available, and they are very much accumulated. They are working together. That is how it is operating very much like. Even though Buddha clearly mentioned that eye and form are prerequisites to arise eye consciousness. So when they are operating, but they are very much like operating together so fast. So as a result of that, the eye contact going to arise. So similarly, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, and mind contact. And then 18 kinds of mental explorations are there. That is where once we see a form through our eyes, if it is joyful, we are further and further going to explore that, so that the joy may further increased. And so we are taking various signs of the form, various shapes, various colors of the form, so that the joy is going to be increased. And similarly, sometimes when we see a form through our eyes, grief going to arise, and sometimes we further and further look at that, so that more and more grief going to arise. Similarly, there are situations we see someone or something through our eyes, and then it causes to arouse equanimity, and we continue to explore that, continue to observe. As a result of that, equanimity grows. So likewise, the other senses also we can understand. So because of this mental exploration, so our minds are continuously explored more and more details. As a result of that, any of these three kinds of feeling tones going to be arised. Either joy, either grief, or either equanimity. As a result of that, altogether there are 18 kinds of mental explorations. Now, this is what actually we so far covered, and now we can move forward to the other part. That is actually the 36 positions of being. So 36, we can say, how one may derive happiness, so one, how one may derive feelings, and that we can say according to the teaching. So altogether there are 36. 18 are related to the household life, another 18 is related to the kind of renunciative life. Now this renunciative life here does not really mean that one completely relinquish the household life and become a monk. Rather, through the mind at that moment or at that given period, one does not really do any kind of gratification, the typical operation of our senses. Rather, we do something completely different. Typical approach is that using our senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind, so we are doing some sort of gratification. Through seeing the forms, we are trying to gratify ourselves. We have various sensual desires, and those sensual desires are going to be fulfilled by exploring those forms. Those sensual desires are going to be fulfilled by exploring various sounds, various odors, various tastes. So likewise, that is the typical operation of our senses. And that is called the household type of enjoyment or usage of those senses. So therefore, Buddha categorized whole situation into two main categories. That is the there are 18 kinds of household life existence, and there are 18 kinds of renunciative kind of existence, renunciative mode of living, we can say. Household type of mode of living and renunciative type of mode of living. And then now Buddha going to explain what are these 18 of household type of mode of livings. And there he mentioned there are 6 kinds of joy based on the household life, and again 6 kind of grief based on the household life, and again 6 kind of equanimity based on the household life. So this is how he explained. So altogether 6 into 3, that becomes 18. Now if we see what are these 6 kinds of household kind of moods or modes, how one can live, so that is not difficult to understand. So there are various forms, and they are maybe desire to see, and there are desires in ourselves to see them. Those are agreeable, and they are, we can say, attractive, beautiful, and they are gratifying. And as a result of that, so we consider gaining them or acquiring them as a kind of a satisfaction. So when we consider such kind of attitude, when we are operating with such kind of an attitude, when we gain such a beautiful form, then there is a arising of this worldly kind of joy. And sometimes we have already experienced such kind of worldly kind of happiness, and we can even recall that. So it has happened some time ago. But now we can recall it. And when we are recalling it, again worldly kind of joy going to arise. And similarly, we can wish, may I have that kind of a beautiful or attractive form. So when we are wishing that, that also can lead to generate some kind of unhappiness. That is also worldly type of joy. But here, with respect to the forms, now I and forms are very much operating here. And even though I and form are predominant, so mind is the most important part here. So through the minds we are enjoying, either in the present moment, either when we are reflecting about the past experience, or either we are wishing about something going to happen in the future. So this is the type of worldly joy that Buddha explained available with respect to I. So similarly, there are happiness with respect to sounds. So there are beautiful sounds, maybe melodies, maybe songs that we really like to listen. And by listening that, so we feel happy, we feel agreeable, we feel satisfied, and we feel gratified. And as a result of that, we feel acquiring them, or maybe recording them, or having them, listening to them is a kind of a joy. So therefore, this joy is recognized as a worldly kind of joy. And when we consider the past sounds, so already we have listened certain songs, sounds, and we can recall them. And when we are recalling them, again there are kind of happiness or joy going to arise. When we are going to wish, when we are wishing, may I have an opportunity to listen to that song again. So when we are thinking like that, also certain amount of joy can arise. Now this kind of joy, Buddha mentioned, is sensual, and again it is a household type of joy, worldly type of joy. So similarly, he explained about the joy with respect to odors, with respect to tastes, with respect to what you call the tangibles, and with respect to various mental objects. Now that is the household kind of joy. And that is how sometimes we are living. That is how our minds are operating. And if we jump to the other part, I will later explain about the renunciative type. If we go to the grief, which is based on the household life, and that is also not difficult to understand, where Buddha mentioned sometimes we don't gain what we like. So there are beautiful sights that we like to have, like to see, but we didn't get it. We are not getting it, even in the present moment. And we might worry that it may not happen in the future as well. We won't get such an opportunity to see that drama, to see that teledrama, or see that, beautiful scenery, or my loved one, or whatever it is. So I won't get a chance to see him or her or that. At that time, there's a kind of a grief arise in the mind, Domanasa arise in the mind. So Buddha mentioned, so not gaining it, not gaining what we desire, not gaining what is agreeable, not gaining what is satisfied, is causing to generate certain amount of unsatisfaction, certain amount of grief in the mind. And that is also with respect to the household life. Because what we are desiring is more very much into the worldly sense. Those are forms, those are sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles, and mental objects, and they are more referred to the household life, worldly attribute. Now, again, that is also not difficult to understand. Now we can move forward to the equanimity. Equanimity based on the household life. Now there are situations. It is not the happiness, it is not the grief, rather equanimity is predominant in our mind. So we are simply glancing with certain forms. So we see something, assume that you are driving a vehicle, and at that time there are various shops and there are various people passing by, and we don't bother much about them. And we are simply glancing, we are simply at the surface level. And we simply see them, but there is no any happiness, there is no grief, rather equanimity is available. So the most important part here is we have certain amount of ignorance, that is because we are not penetrating. Rather, we consider at the conventional level they are people, they are pedestrians, or they are vehicles, they are various say buildings or whatever it is, and we are simply at the level of convention, and we can't penetrate it, and as a result of that we are simply having sort of an equanimity. Now, and here and this person, actually, when we are going through such thing, we don't know any much of the details, so we don't know much about the depth of these objects, and we don't know their real nature. So simply we are limited our exploration, our knowledge, only to the surface level, and we don't know their danger, or if we are associating them, what is going to happen, so, and how they are operating, or whatever. Such information is not available to us. We are very much like blind. So therefore Buddha mentioned, so this sort of equanimity is kind of a blind equanimity. It's a kind of an ignorant equanimity. There is no wisdom included there. There is no any kind of a deeper practice included, or we haven't go through a kind of a deeper practice. And therefore simply this is the worldly type of equanimity. So that is ignorant base. So this is the worldly kind of household equanimity, and as you can understand, there are such equanimity going to arise using the sounds, using the odors, using the tastes, using the tangibles, and again using various mental objects. Now these are the household type of, say, explorations, or household kind of modes of living with eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and mind. And when we are dealing with the outside objects, so we have these kinds of three different kinds of feeling tones, either joyful, either grief arise, or either equanimity arise. And again, they are very much based on the ignorant, and again, they are desirable when we are going for joy, and we are gaining them. And into the grief side, we are not gaining them. And in the equanimity side, when we are going through them, there is no any kind of penetrative knowledge. Now, if we go to the other part now, so that is the six kinds of renunciative joy. Now, there is the possibility of joy while we are practicing. Now, here actually the vipassana is encouraged. So, one, rather than simply trying to gratify one's senses, one is now trying to develop another perspective, another understanding, and that understanding is based on the vipassana, contemplation. So you are trying to look at the whole thing in a different perspective. Say, suppose you are going through forms, experiencing certain forms, so rather than limiting our experience to the level of surface or to the level of convention, one can go a little deeper and understand their real nature. And one may start that in the real vipassana. Most of the time one may start with the body, with kayanupassana. Say for example, say you are typically recognizing this body as me, mine, myself, and this body is something, a unit. So with that kind of a wrong perspective we start, wrong perception we start. And assume that you are developing mindfulness based on the postures. So when you are recognizing various postures, you understand, okay, this body, even though I call it as me, mine, myself, it is simply using various postures. Those postures are constantly changing, and therefore this is nothing but four postures. So another perception, a little advanced post-perception going to arise in the mind. Now if you consider anatomical parts, say 32 parts, now with some concentration you are contemplating about the body, and you understand this body consists of body hair, head hair, flesh, and then bones, bone marrows, say blood, urine, etc., etc. So various parts are there in the body. So as you analyze various anatomical parts like that, contemplate those anatomical parts, so the previous compactness view going to be break, broken. Because typically we consider the whole thing as a unit, as a one thing, but you are considering the constituent parts now. So as you know the constituent parts, then actually you can't have a unit, you can't have a compact body. Rather, it's a combination of various parts. Very much like you are making a vehicle using various components. Four wheels, say the steering wheel, then the seats, engine, the fuel, seats, the body, etc., etc. So all together, once it is assembled in a particular manner, we call it a car. So similarly, there are various components in the body, and once it is assembled, then we call it a man, we call it a woman. So then we have a deeper understanding with respect to the typical conventional level. Now we have a much better understanding. And even if we go further, say you are doing the elements meditation. Now you are trying to recognize the operations of elements, the manifestations of elements available in the body. So there are more and more understanding going to arise, because what we are trying to recognize is penetrating the convention. Now we are very much like operating in the conventional, sorry, in the deeper level, penetrative level, transcending level, and there we understand, okay, this is nothing but four elements. They are operating constantly, and it's the accumulation of four elements, manifestation of four elements, and more we may go through it, the whole compactness break. And you can't have kind of a fixed shape, and it is nothing but certain processes available. So likewise, the penetrative knowledge, deeper understanding about the reality is going to arise. Now this is how actually the wisdom going to arise. So when such wisdom is available, it is possible to have joy. Now suppose you have learned some Dhamma, you have heard some Dhamma, you have read certain books, and you have kind of an inspiration about the Dhamma, and you want to penetrate it, or you want to realize it practically. Now you are practicing Vipassana, so that so that you yourself be able to understand the Dhamma. And it's a kind of a deep task, or kind of a, say, tedious task. So as you are getting some amount of success in that task, say you are understanding the various elements are now not merely elements, but they are constantly changing. And they are quickly arising and passing away. And they are constantly oppressed by this arising and passing away. And again, this is beyond our control. And we have no control in all this process. Now deep insights are going to arise, so that produces certain amount of joy. So this is the joy Buddha talks about, this renunciative type of joy. Now, when you are developing that with other senses, say now we discuss with respect to the body, now probably you can observe various external phenomena, say various sounds are there, and even those sounds are quickly arising and passing away. So once you realize that, again joy arise. Because your mind is now very much attuned towards that kind of an understanding, and you are not taking the typical worldly kind of approach. Rather, you want to have a kind of a penetrative knowledge. And when you are gaining that, you generate a fair amount of joy. Now, similarly, suppose you are experiencing certain forms, you can see certain forms, various sights. And some people actually, they are mentioning, because of their deep penetrative, say, concentration, very good mindfulness, sharp mindfulness, even if they see certain outside objects, so they see they are arising and passing away. Actually, it is not a must to see that, but certain people have that skill where their concentration is fairly deep and their mindfulness is very sharp. So even the outside objects, assume that you are seeing a particular wall. Now this wall is no more a wall. So what you see is a quick, rapid arising and passing away. And so likewise, even the forms, one can see how they are quickly arising and passing away. Then the joy can arise. Similarly, the sound, similarly the odors, similarly the tastes. We already discussed about the tangibles. And suppose now you are moving forward Chitta Anupassana. You are looking at various mental objects. And they are, rather than feeding them, so you simply allow them to come and allow them to go. And you are not basically doing any kind of welcoming or any kind of suppression. Rather, you simply be mindful about what's really happening. What happens then is that you understand, okay, certain mental objects, maybe certain thoughts, certain feelings, certain perceptions going to happen in the mind. And if you are not feeding them, if you are simply maintaining a kind of equanimity towards them, then they have the nature to pass away. It is not that you are making them pass away, you are chasing them out or you are suppressing them, rather they themselves pass away. Now you understand, okay, even this rising and passing away, the impermanence, not limited to the physical world, it is common to mental world. So again joy arises by understanding these deep insights. Because you heard the Dhamma, but now only you are experiencing through your direct knowledge. So then the joy is going to arise. And Buddha mentioned even in Dhammapada that when one see quick arising and passing away to whatever the phenomena, there is some inhuman kind of joy can arise because it is beyond the typical worldly sense. So typically we being happy, we being joyful when we see the permanence, when we see the existence. My child is there, he is now happy, he is joyful, he is healthy, so I am happy. But the opposite here, so there is no child, but the four elements are there and they are constantly arising and passing. So this is something completely contradicting to the typical conventional approach. Now, when you see this kind of penetrative knowledge, when you are experiencing this kind of penetrative knowledge, then the joy can arise. So the mental world also one can explore, and as a result of that, the joy can arise. Now, if we move towards the grief, based on the renunciative life, assume that you are going through that sort of understanding, some deep understanding, some penetrative knowledge, and you know the impermanent, and you know the suffering, and you know the non-self, and all these insights are now available. But still, you didn't find kind of a refuge. So your motivation or your objective, your goal of the practice is to attain some freedom of mind, attain some deeper wisdom of the mind, and again living in that freedom, not just always oppressed by this impermanent nature of the whole physical and mental condition phenomena. Is it possible for me to completely get liberated? So you have that kind of inner yearning for such kind of freedom, but still you couldn't achieve it. Now, when you have that attitude, then certain amount of grief arise, unsatisfaction arise, because you still couldn't achieve that goal. When am I going to be fully enlightened? When am I going to be a stream winner? When can I have that kind of a composed, serene, tranquil, peaceful state of mind? Because at the moment we are experiencing that, quick arising and passing away, and quick unsatisfaction and unself nature, and it can produce certain amount of even fear, and again it certain amount of frustration, unsatisfaction, and now one is looking to an alternative solution, but you couldn't find it yet. Still the mind didn't come to that kind of a maturity, so still mind is simply operating in the condition level, not yet become the unbounded, or not yet become the complete free. But you are yearning that. As a result of that, some amount of unsatisfaction, grief can arise. And that Buddha mentioned the grief available in the renunciative life, the vipassana life. Actually, this is not uncommon. So, most of the time, people start, even myself start with, have a kind of a goal. Let me get at least a sotapanna in this very life. So, such kind of a goal. So, when we couldn't achieve it, still certain amount of unsatisfaction, little bit of a grief, be available in the mind. And that is what Buddha mentioned as the renunciative type of unsatisfaction or renunciative type of grief. And it can happen when you are dealing with the five or rather six objects. Assume that you are developing certain amount of vipassana using forms and deep understanding arise, but still couldn't get the freedom. Then that grief can arise. You are observing various sounds and deep understanding arise, knowing their impermanent nature. You have some understanding, but still the release didn't happen. You couldn't dwell in a release mind, freed mind. Similarly, the smells, taste, tangibles, and the mental objects. So, still we are operating in the conditioned level, have some understanding, but not yet get into the unconditioned. So, the kind of a grief can arise. Now, this is the grief Buddha mentioned about the renunciative life. Now, if we move to the what you call equanimity. Equanimity in the renunciative life. Now, if we are going through certain amount of understanding, say you are contemplating various elements, so when that contemplation happens automatically, sometimes what is available is equanimity. And there are some knowledge is available. You are no more in the very mundane kind of worldly conventional level, but you have come far deep with the wise reflection, with yoniso manasikara. So what is available is the equanimity gained through wisdom. So that's why I mentioned, at the very early stage, only limited amount of penetration. Assume that you are simply knowing the postures. So there is no person, but merely the change of postures are available. When you are contemplating into the anatomical parts, okay, there is no person, but an accumulation of various body parts, anatomical parts. When you are coming to the elements, there is no person, there is no being, me, myself, whatever, but it's a kind of an operation of four elements. Now there's a deep penetration. So you are deepening your insight. Penetrating knowledge is further and further enhanced. So maybe the tone available, the feeling available could be equanimity. Now this equanimity is quite different from the previous ignorant kind of equanimity. I mean, that is what we need to differentiate. So here the equanimity arises because we have a fair amount of understanding. We have penetrated the typical conventional mundane type of level and we are able to understand some deep realities. As a result of that, the mind is in the equanimity. And assume that by further developing insights, assume that the mind has completely liberated even for a moment, even for a short period. Even that time, sometimes the equanimity is available because there are no objects to associate. It is very much like objectless. So the equanimity is the one most of the time what mind is having. Very much like the pure water. So joy is very much like you are adding certain desirable substances to the water, sugar and say some taste, some liquids, and so that it become more tasty. That is very much like the joy part. But on the other hand, assume that you are boiling it and you are putting some decoction or you are putting some medicine and or maybe it becomes more bitter. So that we can call it as kind of a pain part, the grief part. But when those two extremes are completely not available, so what we have is the simply pure water, and it is tasteless, we can say. That is the equanimity, we can say. And here, this equanimity is more penetrative than the previous mundane type of equanimity. So in that mundane type of equanimity, you didn't go through any kind of such contemplation. You are simply dealing at the surface level. Your mind simply glancing, didn't have any understanding. As a result of that, the equanimity is available. But here you have penetrated the whole thing, understood the reality, but the available feeling tone is the equanimity. Now this is the difference. Now if we compare a little bit of these things, now say if we go back to six kinds of joy, household life and the renunciative life. If we compare these two, in the household life, we gain what we desire. Maybe form, sound, smells, taste, etc. When we gain those desirable objects, then the joy is going to arise. And when we are even recalling what we already gained, then the joy arises. So when we are wishing some desirable things, then the joy arises. That is very much in the mundane level. But in the renunciative type, so you are actually penetrating the whole experience, understanding their real operation, their reality. As a result of that, you understand a fair amount of insights, and as a result of that, the joy arises. On the other hand, if we consider the grief in the household type, so we are not gaining what we desire. There are beautiful sights, there are beautiful sounds, but we are not gaining them. So since we are not gaining them, so we feel unsatisfied, we feel disappointed. And assume that you already had some kind of a beautiful thing in the past, but at the moment you are not gaining it, and now you are wishing that, and you have certain doubts about it. You are not going to make it available. So the grief arises. So that is the typical mundane kind of grief, household type of grief. But the renunciative type of grief is entirely different, where you are able to penetrate more and more deeply, and you understand some amount of real insights, but not yet achieve kind of a transcendental type of experience. Penetrative knowledge is there, but the freedom is not yet available. And you have heard that the arahants are there, you have heard that the sotapannas are there, the noble people are there, they are more in a more relaxed mental state, but still I couldn't have it. Then the grief arises, then the unsatisfaction arises, because you couldn't yet achieve what you want. That is the grief talking in this renunciative type. And if we go to the equanimity, which I already discussed, the mundane or the household type of equanimity simply associate the ignorance. On the other hand, the renunciative type of equanimity basically happen because of the understanding. Now, Buddha now come to another teaching, that is, now we have already discussed 36th type of these kinds of states of mind, and Buddha now give a very interesting teaching here. By depending on this, abandon that. Idam nissa idam pajahata. By depending on this, abandon that. Now if I show that with the flow diagram, now I am trying to depict here household life. When we are gaining, joy is there. When we are not gaining, grief is there. And say when we are having some ignorance, the equanimity is there. With respect to forms, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles and mental objects. Vipassana we already understood. So insights are there, insight practice is there. So joy can arise, grief can arise and the equanimity can arise. Now there are two sides now. Household life type as well as the vipassana type, the renunciative type. Now what Buddha mentioned is to apply certain principle in order to overcome household type of joy. Buddha is asking to use the joy arising in the vipassana. So you have deep penetrative knowledge, as a result of that the joy is there. So you use that joy in order to avoid the joy in the household life. So now this joy is replaced by the renunciative type of joy. So these, they are the principle is depending on the insight practice, the joy available in the vipassana practice, you are abandoning the joy in the household life. So you apply this principle. Now the household type of joy is not there, but the joy available through vipassana is available. Similarly, Buddha mentioned to remove household kind of grief using the vipassana kind of grief. So you have previously in the household type, you are always getting grief because you are not gaining what you want. That is with respect to the household sensual gratification based on things. But here now you are diverting that desire to the more sublime kind of achievement, gain, freedom, enlightenment or whatever it is. And they are also producing grief, but it is not the household type of grief. But what you are available is the renunciative type of grief. Now grief is not available, the household type of grief is not available. Now Buddha mentioned the remove household type of equanimity by means of the insight kind of equanimity, renunciative type of equanimity. Now altogether these three are not available. The household joy, household grief, household equanimity are not available. What is available is renunciative joy, renunciative grief, renunciative equanimity. Or vipassana based on the joy and grief, equanimity based on vipassana. So those are the only things available. Actually, this doesn't mean that we never get the household type. But when they arise again and again, we can use these to replace those household type of say joy, grief and equanimity. It is not happening immediately. Again and again, when mind wants to associate household type of joy, you have to be vigilant and replace that with vipassana kind of joy. Whenever household kind of grief going to available, you have to replace that with vipassana kind of grief. Whenever household kind of equanimity going to arise, we have to replace that with vipassana based on the equanimity based on vipassana. It's a kind of a process. It is not the one-time replacement, but again and again we have to practically do it, practically apply this principle. Depending on this, abandon that. Idam nissa idam pajahata. So this principle has to be applied again and again to our mind, so that the most of the time, renunciative kind of joy, renunciative kind of grief, renunciative kind of equanimity is going to be available. Now, assume that you have these three for a considerable period of time. Now, what you have is this. Either the mind is joyful about vipassana insights, either it is thinking about not available more enlightenment, being a sotapanno, those kinds of goal I couldn't still achieve, so a certain amount of grief is there. Or you have a certain amount of equanimity because of penetrative knowledge. Now these three are the only ones predominant. Now, Buddha mentioned, remove this grief. Now, renunciative grief, that you always want to have become enlightened, you want to become a sotapanna. Well, it generates certain amount of grief, certain amount of unsatisfaction. So now Buddha asks to replace this grief with joy. Already you have practiced certain amount. So you are now not the typical, mundane and worldly kind of a person, but you have some spiritual component. You have certain inspiration towards the practice. So use that to remove that grief, to remove that renunciative grief. So what is now available is joy and equanimity. grief is replaced. What is going to be available is joy and equanimity. Now this joy and equanimity is the predominant one. Now Buddha mentioned remove joy using equanimity. So equanimity is more in that sense productive towards the wisdom even than the joy. So you can see when we are coming or when we are moving forward, it is not kind of that one become elated or one become more extremely happy, elated. Rather, one become more equanimous, serene. So that is the path. So that is how Buddha wants us to apply this theory, the principle, idan nisai dampajahata. Depending on this, abandon that. Now you have equanimity more than the joy. So mind is more into an equilibrium, more into an equanimous state. And that state is not based on the ignorance. Rather, it has gone through a fair amount of practice. And with that practice, you are more and more experiencing equanimity. Okay, I think that is enough for today. And there are the other parts. Those are again more and more interesting. Buddha is taking us more into the deep understanding about these theories. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
For anyone who would like to ask any questions, you may raise your hand, or you can also send them anonymously via the chat. So there's one question here, Bhante.
Yeah.
Venerable Bhante, is Vidarshana meditation a higher state of Vipassana meditation? Please explain, much merit.
Could you repeat it, Jennifer?
It's asking whether Vidarshana, V-I-D-H-A-R-S-H-A-N-A, whether this meditation is a higher state of Vipassana meditation.
Yeah, I mean, Vidarshana is the Sanskrit term as far as I know. Vipassana is the Pali term. So the same thing is referred. Vidarshana is in Sanskrit, Vipassana is in Pali. So the same thing in different languages. The practice is more broader. So it is not just a very limited scope, but it has a broader scope. And that's why, say for example, starting with the say mindfulness practice. At the beginning, you are very much like developing mindfulness. We can't say that we are having kind of a penetrative knowledge. But when we have a fair amount of mindfulness, it has a quality of penetration. Rather than simply being in the surface, that the mind with mindfulness has a quality of penetration, apilapana lakkhana. So it is going deeper. Now the possible insights are there. Now you are having kind of a ability to investigate. Using mindfulness, you are not just staying at the surface level, rather you try to explore and you are trying to understand what is really going on. So that the Vipassana is very much like growing. And say you are now fairly penetrated the typical compactness view. Now you understand, okay, these are the bodily parts. Certain amount of Vipassana. Some amount of insight. And again, going deeper, now this is nothing but elements. A further refined level of insight knowledge. And understand their impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature. Say non-self nature, further amount of knowledge. And when you are understanding that, the dispassion arise, disenchantment arise, as a result of that mind is released, and that is also Vipassana knowledge. So likewise, the Vipassana knowledges are quite deeper, and I mean, they are growing, and they are in a various, in a broader spectrum. So everything we can call it in the simple term as Vipassana.
Practice the Bodhisattva path, whether they also need to practice Vipassana?
Why not? Because I mean, say if you consider Buddha's previous lives, I think he has practiced fair amount of vipassana. Because I mean, we can't say that those have arisen in him only in this very life. Now, can't exactly get a certain amount of say, can't remember some, I mean, some aspects actually he has developed. Say, for example, in the Mahaushadha Pandita, in the Ummagga Jataka, where, I mean, rather than simply seeing the surface level, he has some deep insights about what's really going on. So he's thinking differently than the typical other beings. Other pandits, other, say, advisors to the king are only seeing in one perspective, but Mahaushadha was able to look in other directions, in various other perspectives. So likewise, he has developed a fair amount of wisdom even in his previous lives. And even the Bodhisattva, I feel, therefore, has to have these kinds of penetrative knowledge. And it is in Dhamma I have read and heard that they are not achieving the Maggapala, but all the other vipassana knowledges they can again and again practice so that their minds are more ready for that. Minds are fairly trained for that. So assume that one is now in the last birth, now he is going to become the Buddha. So then the insights are more available quite quickly.
Thank you, Jennifer, for that. Thank you, Bhante, for the today's talk. I actually just like to share what I feel about when I go through the today's Dhamma sermon, Bhante. I think I see that me as a Vipassana practitioner, it's a very nice way that diagram is explaining in a way, I would say, to the dispassion I feel. Where now I can see a bit more path that I can apply that. Previously, yes, I kind of naturally try to do the vipassana rather than the, I would say, the household life. But nevertheless, you need to balance both. So I feel this is a very good way of continuing. And it also kind of explain some of the feelings I had now.
Right.
I just wanted to share that feeling, especially because, you know, like I have situations where sometimes I may feel what kind of like a discussion about what we are doing in our life, day-to-day life. But then I think that could be a reason why I am more attracted to the other side, where I now try to look the joy and equanimity out of that.
So that's, I mean, beautifully Buddha mentioned, I mean, when we more and more understand the consequences of the typical household life, household joy and household grief and household equanimity, now mind is searching or looking for something deep, a kind of an alternative, rather than simply being in the surface mundane level. Now mind is more penetrative, and so as you mentioned, it may happen naturally, and there are a certain amount of happiness available in the renunciative life, Vipassana approach, and now one is maintaining that happiness, that joy, enjoying that joy, or enjoying that equanimity. Yes, very correct.
Yes, Pante. Thank you so much for the talk.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Chita Devi to please ask the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, I have just a few queries. Now there are different kinds of consciousness when you put the six internal bases and external, and then you have the six classes of consciousness.
Yes.
Are they actually six entities, or is it all in this one, which just then when it's the eye from the main or the consciousness part of it goes to the eye and ear and so forth, or are there really six distinct entities
No, actually,
different types of consciousness.
No, actually, they are a group. Now, if we consider eye consciousness here, it doesn't mean a single eye consciousness. It's a millions, billions of eye consciousness. We are assume that you are seeing a red color. So then, red color based on billions of eye consciousness are there. Now you are seeing a green color. Billions of eye consciousness is arising, knowing the green color. Actually, the green, red, and those are not belong to the consciousness. They are further belong to the mind, not merely the consciousness. Those are coming to the recognition part. The consciousness merely know, merely get a kind of a stimuli. So it's a mere consciousness, and it is not a single, but eye consciousness here mean billions of consciousness. I mean, immeasurable number of consciousness arising. When we are operating our eye aligned with certain forms, and those forms are constantly changing, and many different kinds of forms are there. So, I mean, therefore, I mean, since they are arising with by means of the eye or with respect to eye, it is called eye consciousness. It is not a single eye consciousness.
Yeah, but that is. From the main, there is a main consciousness which breaks up into these billions of eye consciousnesses.
No, not at all. There is no any such kind of a main consciousness.
Then, you know, they talk about the knower. Then who is that? Is that also a different... Ajahn Brahm always says the knower and the doer.
No, actually...
So the knower is,
so there
knower
is
the consciousness.
There is no a person called knower. There's a knowing quality, we can say. So
yes.
when we are coming to deep vipassana, so there is another category of consciousness Buddha talks, that is what we call as unmanifested consciousness, anidassana vijnana. So that is not conditioned. Now here all these classes of consciousness is a conditioned consciousness. Now, say for example, eye consciousness arise because of eye and form. They are the main constituent parts. So without them, eye consciousness cannot arise. But assume that all these six are absent. Then unmanifested consciousness is there. It's a kind of an inherent knowing, but we can't call it as a person. And again, it is not conditioned.
No, so when we speak about the knower, that is an unconditioned situation.
We can say so, but when we are talking the term knower, it denotes some kind of a person, isn't it?
No, we understand that, Bhante, but when things are automatically happening and we are watching from outside, that is the knower who is watching.
Yeah, when you are using that term...
It's not a person, but it is an entity. It is an entity, right?
You can't even call an entity. We can call it as a kind of a process.
Okay.
Kind of a process, yes, yes.
Project,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because you are watching from... It's just happening and you have no control.
Mm-hmm.
So you understand the concept of anatta because you are not doing it. It's just happening.
Mm-hmm.
But this process, there is a process of understanding this, right?
Yeah, that we can say, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So actually there's another interesting sutta... Kalakarama Sutta. In Kalakarama Sutta, Buddha completely deny the existence of a knower. So in the sense of a person. Now we can say, say there is form, there is eye. So I know, assume that there is sounds, there is ear. I know the sound. Then there is a person who is knowing, who is the knower. We can argue like that, no?
Yes.
But Buddha refute, Buddha completely deny, there is no such kind of a knower.
The process, the phenomena.
Exactly. So they are happening due to kind of a process. Apart from a process, there is no any ongoing or everlasting person who is knowing.
And you mentioned about the Sotapanna. Now, this Sotapanna is this person understands the concept of Sakaya Ditti, but hasn't really realized that part. Is that right if I said that?
I think no, because Sakaya Ditti is completely eliminated in Sotapanna. So not the mere book knowledge.
Is it only the mana, the conceit?
No.
Eliminated by the Arahat?
No. That is not referred as Sakaya Ditti. It is called Asmimana.
Yes, but isn't that also a part of it?
No, can't say so. Because Sakaya Ditti typically refers to more gross kind of wrong view, thinking that the whole compact thing is I, me, myself. Say, for example, the body. So body, you don't know much about it, is consisting of various body parts, or it is going through various processes, or it is consisting of various elements. But you consider this is my body, this is I am. So that is the very gross kind of ignorance that typically we have. The Sotapanna may understand, okay, there is no such compact body. It's constituent of various maybe body parts, maybe various elements. So there is no kind of compact body. But it's a kind of a continuous changing elementary process. And with respect to the body, then he has penetrative knowledge. He doesn't have the Sakaya Ditti with respect to body. So he has to develop that with respect to feelings, with respect to perceptions, with respect to formations, as well as with respect to the consciousness.
Yes, but we can experience that when we go into meditation now, Bhante. We can say so
because Sotapanna is still subjected to some amount of ignorance, therefore the insights are not readily available. One niece of Vishakha passed away. Vishakha started to cry and approached the Buddha, and she was explaining her grief. And with the Dhamma sermon, again Vishakha was able to develop the insight. So therefore, the Sotapanna doesn't have sort of a permanent or lasting strong kind of an insight, but some penetration has happened during the practice. Yes. We can say so.
Yeah, because we are understanding this and we are experiencing it. No, Bhante, I mean, not in the deep, strong way that we are supposed to for a Sotapanna, but we are experiencing some of it.
We can say so.
And the other question, which Jennifer was very kindly found out for me, but I just want to confirm with you that you said, Bhante, that once a month, 8th of the month, that there was a question and answer session on a Saturday. Now, is that she gave me the information? Is that run by Venerable Dhammajiva Hamduro, or is it run by you, Bhante?
It is not a question and answer session alone. Actually, we conduct a kind of a presentation, and then we have 15 minutes about guided sitting, and then we have around 15 minutes a question and answer session. It's actually done by me and organized by Shalika from New Jersey.
So, Bhante, can you be kind enough to send that the link to Jennifer, then she can send it to us, because we can find it, Bhante.
Okay.
And
thank you.
If you put it in Zoom, it's a bit difficult, but if you email it to Jennifer, she will be very kind and give it to us. Yes, you'll do that then, Bhante. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Sorry to bother you. Thanks.
No problem. You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Upandra.
Good afternoon, Bhante. Just want to seek some advice regarding my past experience. When I was doing the sitting meditation, I used to look into my nostril, and then I felt like only my right side of the nostrils were actually taking the in-breath and out-breath, and space between in-breath and out-breath, likewise I was observing, and then my body was slowly going down.
Going down in the sense? Pose. Going down means you are bending?
Bending. And then again when I walk, as usually what I do during that time, I go up from my body and observe. And then there, I feel like my upper part is just kind of completely opened to the universe. Then inside it also kind of dark and empty, and there's some kind of empty feelings also there. And I feel like particles going up and down likewise. I get that sort of feeling. And then now this was happening to me for the last few months. And then I just wanted to go above a little bit higher again. And I felt like there's some sort of a dark, deep, empty space. And but from that also I can see that I'm breathing, and I see myself like a very tiny sort of a being, like a toad, stay somewhere and just doing it. And then when I go higher and higher, I become smaller and smaller, and it just opens up. And there's kind of a very relaxed sort of a feeling, like going through the clouds, and there's kind of empty particles here and there, and I'm just emptiness in between that. And still, if I want, I can observe myself.
Yeah.
And also,
Now, I mean, in this state, Upendra, is there still some any person exist? I exist. Clouds exist, sky exist.
Something like this happened, Bhante.
No, what I mean is, are you dealing with various, I mean, conventional level norms? Like my body is there, there are various clouds. So that terms actually represent typical conventions, no? So you still mind talks in that language, right?
Stage one, it happened like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then I let go of it, and then you advised me not to think about this beginning and just different transformations and the upadhiti bhava. So likewise, it was just happening in my mind, but you asked me to ignore that and just keep concentrating about my breathing. And likewise, so I was doing it, and this time also I was just trying to keep that aside and I was just observing. Then what I did was, I wanted to check whether this is just the imagination. Likewise.
No, I don't think it's an imagination. I feel it's a part of concentration, but I mean, it's more into the tranquility side. So, this mind can expand, or mind can go very far. And while being in the very far, you can watch the breath. Or while closer to the breath, you can watch it. Or while maintaining a very subtle state, you can maintain, we can observe the breath. And we can, while maintaining kind of a gross state, you can observe breath. So likewise, various kinds of, we can call them as states, or various kinds of moods, can be maintained and still can observe the breath.
And also, Bhante, when I was just going higher and higher, I feel like, I can also listen to sounds, what is happening somewhere, spirit chantings and sounds of the vehicles, everything is there.
Right.
But even the birds singing, but I can observe them and also myself as well. If I want, I can come back. If I want, I can just stay there.
Yeah.
And suddenly at a stage, at the middle of it, I feel like, no, stop.
Mm-hmm.
No, you just stop this.
Right.
So I was puzzled. Mm-hmm. Then I again wanted to observe from outside.
Yeah.
Then what happened? I felt that relaxation and I felt like I am getting more and more relaxed.
Right.
So I was just, moving up and up. Now I can't see it properly myself there.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But yeah.
I feel that there's something existing, some attachment is there. Like,
yes.
I'm holding on.
Yes.
And suddenly I observe there's some sort of formation, like reddish sort of a formation going here and there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
No, that is what we call as kind of a nimitta. So kind of a light can happen, perception can happen in the mind. So as we are experiencing deep concentrations, so these kinds of lights can happen. So later it can even change to more brighter light, and not a colorful light, rather more kind of say brighter and luminous, or maybe whiter kind of light can happen. So that shows it has gone through certain transitions and now it has come to a more stable perception. So those are indications that the concentration is now developing. I think these are various states of concentration, Upendra. So I mean, you just continue, and I mean these things vary. Actually, these things change in our meditative life. In certain regions, we go through these kinds of different concentration levels, and as we move forward, they become more and more equanimous. Not that really joyful, or not that really exciting, or not that away from us, but rather more familiar, more ordinary kind of type that we are going to experience. But at their early stages, they appear quite interesting, sort of beautiful, and it's completely exciting. So that's kind of a feeling is there. But as we move forward, and these variations become less and less. At the moment, there are huge variations. You feel enlarged, and you see the breath as a small thing. You feel that your mind is completely very far away and watching the breath. And so likewise, different perspectives are there, and those are quite various and even beautiful. And but this going to change. So this may not last for a long time. So this is going to change. So just continue the practice and give more prominence to the understanding the evolution of the breath. See, what is really happening to breath? Is it longer? Is it shorter? I mean, is it warmer? Is it cooler? So likewise, we are more into the realistic part, not to the perception part, but more into the realistic part.
But in that sense, sometimes I feel that breath comes and goes and it decays slowly between time, and there's a huge gap. And then when there's some sort of a kind of a very relaxing period, I look into my mind.
Correct.
That mind also just forms comes and just there, and it dots and it goes off.
Yeah.
And when I was doing the walking meditation, sometimes I feel only my head part is walking, is there, and body part is missing. But I feel there's some sort of an empty cloud, and inside it also there's some part is going on, moving on here. And later I feel that head is also not there, but something is moving there.
Yeah. That's good. That typical conventional body may disappear, and you may only have just a feeling, just a sensation. And then you simply note that sensation. Don't worry about the disappearance of the body, and you don't try to recognize various body parts. Rather, now you only has a very subtle sensation, and see what is happening to that sensation. See the beginning of that sensation, the end of that sensation. So again and again those sensations happen, and you have to know the beginning of the sensation and the end of the sensation. So likewise, actually, the more information what we had, more different conceptual or conventional level of information we had, going to more and more loose, going to disappear, and we simply have very fundamental level of sensation. And that indicates mind is more concentrating, mind is more focusing, and discarding all the conventional things, rather only having a very fundamental, primary kind of an experience. And with that experience, we are actually developing vipassana.
Okay.
what is really happening to this particular sensation, this particular experience. This is more primordial, this is more primary, more fundamental. So that is why we call the vipassana is more into the paramatta level, not to the, say, sammuti level, where the all conventional things have to discard. And then only you may have very direct experiential knowledge, and with that we continue the vipassana.
Sometimes I feel like I'm in a kind of a that same sort of feeling comes in day-to-day life. Then I sometimes when I feel like now I'm here, that concentration kind of it's there, but it just breaks and comes to me. So that time myself ask whether just to observe, go inside or just observe outside and stay with this meeting or what, if the things happening outside likewise. So at that time, Bhante, what's the best thing you can do?
Actually, since you are in a meeting, probably you have to pay attention to what is outside as well, what is really happening in the outside. So I feel that have a kind of a balance, knowing that something is going on in the outside and you can sort of recognize what is really going on. Because if you go too deep, then you can't recognize. You can't recognize what is being discussed in the meeting. Then you forget that or you miss that.
Yeah. And I forget day to day some things also. I tend to forget names and things
yeah.
like that.
It, yeah, it can happen. It can happen, I mean, to some extent. But later, as you are moving forward, you come to a kind of a balance, mental balance, where the necessary information going to automatically remembered. So during the process, these kinds of glitches are available. Sometimes we forget the most, say, obvious things. So likewise, kind of a glitches are there. But later, things become more and more balanced. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your
invaluable guidance. Okay. Teruvan
Sannai.
Okay.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, my name is Sam. It was very interesting Dhamma talk today, where you mentioned about the household side of joy, grief, and equanimity on the vipassana side, and then you mentioned on the vipassana side also try to get rid of grief. Then you have joy and equanimity, and then try to get the joy as well, and then you end up with only equanimity.
Yeah. So that is that. Actually, it is not. Actually, excuse me. It is not. I am telling. It is the Buddha's teaching. So I am just highlighting it. I am trying to explain it. So this is the approach, and this is the kind of a principle Buddha wants to highlight in this sutta. So he is explaining various theoretical information, and then he is very much like simplifying the whole experience. So we have, I mean, we assume that you are a vipassana yogi, but still household life is available. So time to time, there are household joy, there are household grief, household equanimity. But Buddha's sort of teaching is to more now orient towards the vipassana. Orient towards vipassana kind of joy, vipassana kind of grief, vipassana kind of equanimity. Now, even though you are leading a household life, your mind is more attuned towards the vipassana, more kind of meditative life. And there further Buddha wants to refine, okay, now you discard the grief, only have the joy and the equanimity. And next stage is now you discard joy and have more into the equanimity. So it's a kind of a refinement. It's a kind of a growth he's showing. Yes.
Right, I understand. You know, that's really nice.
Yes,
but
yes.
My question is that the thought came to my mind while I was listening to you that when Buddha attained enlightenment, he uttered the Udana Gatha.
Yes.
Aneka Jati Sansaram Saddha Visang Anibisang.
Yeah.
And that he uttered that with a tremendous amount of joy.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, is it okay to have joy as long as you don't get attached to the joy?
Yeah, actually we can say so, because there are instances that Buddha even have a smile. You have heard about it, I think. Hasituppada, we call it as Hasituppada in Pali. So sometimes he had it's not frequently, it's occasionally, there are smiles and due to certain reasons. And sometimes Venerable Ananda has noticed it, and he quickly approached Buddha and he asked, Bhante, why you had a smile? Then Buddha explained, this is the reason. So therefore, we can't say Buddha is, 100% in equanimity. But as you said, even though joy and these things are available, and on one another thing, Miss, who's this? What's your name? You said Sam, right? So
Sam,
yeah.
Sam.
So actually, now still we are going through the practice. Now while going through the practice, we are sort of developing fair amount of momentum. Assume that one level, say you are able to have a kind of a mental freedom. So at that time, as you said, one's mind does not associate any kind of an object, sound, smell, sight, and all those kind of mundane type of things. Mind does not associate. Mind is in a very much in a equanimous and equanimous state, and again more into the non-associative type, unbounding or non-grasping state of mind. Now, Buddha mentioned certain extraordinary skill of an arahant. This is sometimes called as arahanta vikurvana, where if he wants, now this is mentioned about an arahant, if he likes, he can have a kind of an equanimity. If he likes, he can have a joy. If he likes, he can have a kind of a, I don't know, it is a discontent. He can even see the grief part even in the more joyful part. What I want to say is he has more command on his mind.
Yes.
Rather than being a victim of the, habit-made or habit-generated perception, he has a command to his own feeling tone. So
yes.
I think maybe the Buddha also may be using the same thing. So now he is fully enlightened. So if he wants, he can have a joy. If he wants, he can maintain the equanimity. We can call it in that sense as well.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think you just mentioned about smile.
Yes,
yes. Smiling, I don't know whether he smiled or not. I read one story. I think there's a sutta on that.
Mm-hmm.
Where he saw a bunch of ants walking and...
yes, yes.
He smiled at them or something like that and said that these were all at one time...
Such incidents are there. Such incidents are recorded. And Venerable Ananda asked what is the reason for the smile, and then he explained the reason. Yes.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you, Bhante,
yeah.
So much. Teruvan,
okay,
bye.
Okay. Teruvan Sannai. Okay, I think, Jennifer, we have come to the conclusion. And so we today discussed Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, and based on that we had a nice discussion, and with that we were able to accumulate fair amount of merits. Let's share these merits with all the past living relatives, with all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. Let's wish that these merits will help us also to attain path fruition Nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ දේවා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ බුහුතා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා එතාවතාච අම්හෙහි සම්බතං පුඤ්ඤ සම්පදං සබ්බේ සත්තා අනුමෝදන්තු සබ්බ සම්පත්ති සිද්ධියා ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු සාසනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත्वा චිරං රක්ඛන්තු දේශනං ආකාසට්ඨා ච බුම්මට්ඨා දේවා නාග මහිද්దికා පුඤ්ඤන්තං අනුමෝදිත්වා චිරං රක්ඛන්තු මම් පරං ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉදං වෝ ඥාතීනං හෝතු සුඛිතා හුන්තු ඥාතයෝ ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන වාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤ කම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු